Siren Radio.
Of course, it's a wonderful day. It's a gorgeous day. It's a superlative day. We're saying good day to the awesomeness that is Charlotte March. How are you, Charlotte?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Excellent. Charlotte March, actually, Anna, is one of our excellent undergraduates currently reading English at the University of Lincoln and is doing a fine job with respect to that whole profile as well. This is great stuff there. So, Anna, we've seen various incarnations of social media appearing within your feed, including some Egyptology. Would you like to share more?
I'm not an Egyptologist. I don't claim to know anything about any pharaoh on the planet. But what interests me is the man who brought back the head of Memnon, or the head of Rameses, which is in the British Museum. I'm trying to find out the location of the birth of Mr. Giovanni Belzoni's wife, Sarah. And it's been my quest with another couple of people in Jersey to find this. So I have to trek, and I went to a couple of exhibitions, one at the Soane Museum, which sadly I think is now finished, and the other one, which was at the British Museum, which shows the head of said Rameses in its full glory, complete with explosives marking his shoulder, which the French were damned responsible for when they tried to shift him.
I noticed you were very quick to actually blame our colleagues from across the English Channel when it comes to the whole essence of this, this side of things. I mean, I've always been a little bit concerned about Egyptology ever since what happened to the discoverers of Tutankhamun and the Howard Carter exhibition. But from your own perspective, this particular image that I'm actually sort of pulling up now for Charlotte to actually cast her gaze over there. There we are. So, in fact, it's the top of Anna's head there with...
pedagogy. I mean, he's teaching me so much. I mean, it's not really Egyptology that he's teaching me, but I'm the child learning from the statue. And someone implied that he was my date, which I thought was quite funny because I do like statuesque types to appeal.
Steady. Very good. But I mean, Charlotte, your thoughts about the statue? I mean, do you think is Anna right to blame the French for blasting him out of the perfect happiness that he was in over thousands of years in Egypt?
Well, what's the thing with Ozymandias? I mean, some people have a foot fetish, some people have a head fetish. I mean,
it's all down to Ozymandias. You know, this is the line, Anna. Anyway, apart from that, and clearly this was the mission that has taken you to London and so on, you're obviously sounding a lot better this week than you were last week, which is wonderful at that particular area. Very impressed with the glorious ceiling as well. So you've taken to that extent. And I take it that unlike various local hostelry chains, which in fact I was talking about on BBC Humberside matter of 24 hours ago, actually, with Andy Comfort, who have withdrawn from Facebook, you're still going to keep Mark Zuckerberg employed by actually updating us in terms of what things you're doing. Yes.
I think it's the does everyone think that he's a villain? That's what I want to know. Is Mark Zuckerberg actually being branded a villain for this misdemeanor or this unfortunate event? I don't know. What do you think,
Charlotte? What do you think? Is Zuckerberg evil? Is he the anti-being of everything that we've come to appreciate as civilization in the Western world, or is he just being maligned?
Well, the circles I'm a part of are under the notion that he is a lizard, so amoral might be the best option to go with if he's not human.
Well, there we are, 6 minutes past 5 o'clock on Wednesday, April the 18th, and we've already come out with the suggestion, I hesitate to reinforce that, the suggestion that the founder of Zuckerberg is amoral, therefore without morals. That perspective, interesting one. Not a lizard. But if anybody would like to respond... Might be, possibly, I don't know. It's the uncertainty that makes life interesting. What does the rest of the evening have in store for your good self, Anna? And just as the city of Lincoln is being blessed by some wondrous weather, which has managed to synchronise itself with Charlotte's boiler being fixed, yay, you can have double heating today. Brilliant, exactly. What sort of wondrous things will you be looking forward to this evening? Will you be looking ahead to Sci-Fi London Film Festival between the 1st of May onwards, or is that a case of no, we're stepping away from that?
I don't go in for sci-fi much, though. I've seen that 2001 A Space Odyssey is being raved about because it's like a special year, isn't it, for that? But, I think 2001 has a lot to offer, actually, even with the moves of technology and I think I'd watch it again.
It was one of the reasons we still incorporated it as part of the canon for the science fiction module that Charlotte actually took this very academic year. So, you know, if you want to know about Arthur C. Clarke and his 2001 collaboration with Stanley Kubrick, you have the chance now to throw any questions you wish at Charlotte, and she'll instantly just bounce them back at you, because she's that kind of undergraduate, really.
Well, I do have Wikipedia on my phone, so...
There you are. See? that's the quality that's actually there.
What films are showing at the film festival?
What films are showing at the film festival? Very good question. We actually have Chimera, the world premiere of Chimera, which stars Henry Ian Cusack from Lost and The 100. Brilliant but disturbed scientist's children are in cryogenic suspension while he races to cure their deadly disease by decoding the DNA of the immortal Teratopsis jellyfish. To progress, he needs lots of stem cells. A manipulative millionaire can help, but she has her own agenda.
Goodness.
Yeah, that's just one of the many things. We'll be talking about that with Louis Savvy later on in the production. We've also got Sci-Fi Scarborough coming up this weekend. And we'll be speaking to Steve Dickinson about that. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Anna Lewis?
Yes, I have. Thank you very much. That's
very good positivity from that point of view. Actually, did you answer the question as what are you doing for the rest of the day? Is it a case of you just chilling out, relaxing, etc.? Or are you doing something?
Oh, gosh. I've got to go and rescue a few bits from the storage unit because the delivery van couldn't make it up my road. So I've now got things in storage 10 minutes away that need lugging back one by one. So it's
well,
not a fun
as there. You know, last week, Anna, we suggested a relay, and I think you should still consider that. You get the car to put the van to park at the end of the road. Call out your neighbours, summon your neighbours, use, if you wish, go down to the traditional London town crier and effectively invite them to, oh yay, helpeth Anna move her stuff from the end of the road to this road. And it could just be a whole range of wondrousness that's coming up for you there.
Yeah, true. Thank you. Thanks for that suggestion.
Well, we like to ensure that in every shape or form we provide a certain amount of help and assistance, which is one of the reasons why, amongst other things, we can always say...
Prime ministers and presidents may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions remains.
So I take it you'll be back with us in a week's time, Anna?
I would love to. Thank you very much.
William Coles, romantic novelist, political journalist, and regular midweek drive correspondent from the capital of Scotland, with or without his prehistoric shark's teeth.
Marvellous. Are you safely parked, William Coles?
I am safely parked. I am out of the car. I am ready to go.
Oh, and you richly deserve that ident as well, clearly. Well done to number one son, was it, who effectively did telephonic answering duties, or was it somebody completely different?
That was number two son.
Number two son, right. Is he more polite than number one son, or is it nip and tuck, really?
He is more polite, but the number one son has now got a girlfriend, and she has had a magnificent effect on his behaviour. He can occasionally be quite polite now. Yep, she's great.
Well, there you are. In a heteronormative-based society, sometimes you feel as though that can actually impact in all sorts of wondrous ways. But still, we won't go on to that because we've already addressed the issue, as Charlotte Marcher said a matter of seconds ago, that there is a belief that's out there that suggests that Steve Zuckerberg is not a lizard, but is indeed amoral.
A moral.
Nice one, though. That just shows the slight linguistic challenge that China Mieville talks about in terms of embassy town, where, you know, you could have a mole or a moral. A mole or a moral. It's all to do with the tip of the tongue, the lips, pronunciation, and so on. Charlotte, how far do you have to go on your English undergraduate program now? Clearly, coming to the end of essays and various other things, what do the next few weeks have in store for yourself before you can call yourself a graduand and graduate-to-be?
I'm afraid I'll have to camp out at the library for the next 4 weeks, maybe. Three more essays, then free as a bird. Looking for a job, definitely.
There we are. Three more, and the length of those essays, are they 3,000?
3,000, so.
Oh, easy, easy peasy. the quality will be there, etc. William, any advice for Charlotte about, you know, that final... the final few weeks, or indeed job hunting, which I believe is a wondrous thing to work through, really.
I'm intrigued by this idea of camping out in the library. You know, we weren't allowed to do that, but they obviously have sleepovers these days in the library. And so what do you do? Do you make a little tent for yourself underneath one of the desks?
Oh, yes, a set. Rabbit traps and all sorts. You know, it's very Bear Grylls, as it were. Sometimes
right,
you
okay,
trap some first years.
What sort of job are you looking for?
I'm hoping to work in funeral care, so a bit of a transition from English and the wonderful world of Space Odyssey.
Yeah, but...
So why funeral care?
Yeah. Somebody's got to do it, you know?
sure, somebody's got to do it, but why do you want to do it?
Well, I like to talk a lot, so that helps.
You see, William, I think Charlotte is basically a character that's just waiting to be written. I mean, there we are with her little bivouac in the library, you know, basically fishing various sort of founds of knowledge, doing the kind of notion of the ultimate funeral care parlour scenario. It's genius. I mean, if you can't put together a narrative screenplay for that, well, frankly, William, you're not the man I thought you were.
Yes, of course I'll do that for you, Alex. No problem. I'll see if I can knock it out by next week.
Nice. That's
so, what is going to be the love interest, Alex, for this, for our funeral care assistant?
We'll probably be neutral. We'll take a different line entirely. I mean, take it from the love of knowledge.
Well, the transformative effect that it's had on your son, I guess I'll have to have a girlfriend myself, get some aftershave.
Good.
Has it made him dress better?
It just gets better and better.
In funeral care, why are you doing so much talking? Don't you let the people talk and you just ask probing questions every so often? Or are you doing a lot of talking as well?
Well, for a funeral service, it's not necessarily about the preparation of bodies. You do have to perform the ceremony as well.
Oh, you're a celebrant?
Yes, yeah, humanist sort of sermon folk.
Oh, yes, I know all about it. I've got a friend who does that. Yeah, well, it's a terrific job. And you have to tailor-make each funeral for the person who's just died.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Egyptology in the early part. Did you feel that the Egyptians, in terms of building those huge monolithic sort of tributes to their various leaders, were right, or was that just aliens from another planet? Charlotte?
Was Sorry, I was going to be insurrected by an alien.
Then. Exactly. Because clearly in the 21st century, and I've done several radio pieces on this, there is this sense that the last taboo, unlike the Victorians, of course, who had other taboos, the notion of funerals and huge shows and issues was part of the whole show. Have we kind of moved away from that in the 21st century, or have you noticed any sort of aspects that you think, where's it going?
Well, it's not just a traditional thing. Rituals are important. It's how we cope with the sublime, as it were, the other world. I think it's very psychologically necessary to do a send-off for your loved one as a form of respect. So there will always be an industry for death, as there will be for midwifery and healing and all that.
Interesting line. Interesting. Anything to add, William, or is that just a case of, well, that's taken us in a whole new direction, which I wasn't expecting on this fine day in April?
I want to continue down this route. So what's your sort of favourite funeral then? Do you like them being burned or shot up into space, or do you like them being interred in the ground in a wicker basket? Which one do you like, and which one are you planning for yourself?
Well, no, I can't wait to arrange my father's funeral, not a Freudian slip. He plans to get catapulted into the sky. I don't think it's going to happen, but we'll indulge him. He wants to be dressed as Superman and scare some people on cruise ships when they find him in the ocean, like dressed up as that. Me personally, I could just do the wicker basket.
The wicker basket.
Yeah, I don't want to leave too much mess.
Right, in a wood, obviously, or in a graveyard.
Oh, just put me in a sackcloth, I don't mind.
What about you, Alex? What are you? Have you got your funeral planned yet?
I think in the classic words of Robin Williams, food for worms. That's what we're looking for. Food for worms. That's very kind of a recycling side of things there. I'm interested, William, in terms of your little Facebook thing here. Took a load of grumpy kids to escape room, or to an escape room. Fortunately, we just squeaked under the wire. Otherwise, there would have been a lot of swearing and biting. Why was this? Why did you take a load of grumpy kids to an escape room?
Have you done these escape rooms? They offer you a whole load of problems, and you have to solve all the problems and get out of the room in 1 hour. And it can get all very tense with these teenagers taking it all terribly seriously, as if it's life or death, and you're trying to be the calm, soothing voice of reason. Fortunately, we made it.
What was the most challenging part of the whole scenario? Keeping everybody happy, keeping your spirits up, or was it a case of you were regaling more tales of when I was doing my pilgrimage in Santiago, we never had problems about escape, we put our trust in the Lord?
The children are already saying, we don't want to hear any more about that rubbish in Spain. Forget it.
Well, you know, I gave you the opening, and clearly you have been outvoted when it comes to the familial side of things. You must have got lots of photographs to show them. I mean, you know, show your son's girlfriend the photographs of, you know, a possible father-in-law to be at work in Spain.
Yes, I don't think she has that many problems sleeping, actually.
Okay. I hear what you're saying. I'm not to agree, but I do hear what you're saying. Steve Dickinson coming up from Scarborough in a matter of moments, talking about sci-fi Scarborough. We do like to geek beside the seaside. Then we've got Arthur Weingarten, who will be updating us on what he's getting up to in San Diego. Kira Alsbrook, who hasn't joined the university as yet because she started these radio gigs when she attended an open day. She'll be reading public relations from September, but she'll be updating us on her driving lessons and more, and we'll hopefully go over to parts of Skegness with Eva MacDonald in the near future, together with filmmaker Ilana Rain, and Ava featuring Tony Humphries with her latest single, A Nightmare. Meanwhile, have you had an okay telephonic link with us on the programme, William Coles?
It's been more than okay. It's been terrific. Thank you so much.
It's been lovely speaking with you.
Well said, Charlotte. That's really good. That's the kind of thing that makes midweek drivers just stand out as being extra polite from that perspective, which is very good. So I take it, William, you'll be back with us next week?
But just as soon as you ask me, yes.
Of time.
Yes, Charlotte, that is actually Steve Dickinson, and that is his mother that you've been looking at, a mother who is a town crier. Isn't that right, Steve Dickinson, in Scarborough?
My mother's boyfriend is the town crier.
Oh, your mother's
just
boyfriend.
Is this like the boyfriend hoodie or something of your family?
Yeah.
Oh, right, that's extraordinary.
She's his consort.
She's a what?
She's his consort.
Oh, right. Nice.
Bell ringing and shouting.
Well,
he's in fact the loudest man I've ever met. Ever in my life. So when he got the job, he went up for the job a couple of years ago, and I'm like, if anyone's going to get it, it's going to be David. He's going to smash this, and he annihilated everyone in the field. It was just unbelievable. They all walked off as David talked. So
brilliant.
Yeah, he's a top man.
Well, the reason we're looking back at our Facebook Southside Broadcasting page at 2017 Scarborough Sci-Fi Scarborough is it's only a matter of quick calculation. 60-odd hours, Steve, and it'll be all kicking off again, yes? Yes, that's a yes. I heard him telepathically saying yes from that sort of point of view. How's it looking? How's it shaping up? Are you in that? So, I mean, we do this as a traditional thing now, which usually says it's going to be fantastic, it'll be splendid. Each year gets better than the last year. What's it looking like with literally hours to go, Steve Dickinson?
It's looking good. It's looking like superb, really, as well, with the weather forecast. The weather's just cleared up this week beautifully, and they've cut us a load of slack upstairs, and got some good weather booked. So as long as it's not as hot as last year, because it was actually too hot, we had, like, melting stormtroopers and judges walking
must be
around.
Awful for the cosplayers.
Pouring with sweat. So, but it's a lovely airy venue. You know, there's outdoor areas you can go. You know, into the shade and the sun. So, yeah, it's a really great venue. Everything's in place. Everything's sorted. We have crossed the T's and dotted the I's, and we're just like everyone's doing their last couple of shifts at work now. Like I've just walked out my kitchen.
And
I'm sat in the office now.
And for once, it looks as though I won't be alone with my team. We'll have a little group of folk who are coming there. Shaylee McKenzie is going to be making her way to see the thing, as indeed with filmmaker Darren Scales as well. He'll be with us. So great stuff there to cover a range of things. I mean, as I say, what's your most exciting thing you're looking forward to? Is it Dominic? I was going to say Dominic Sandbrook. There, of course, he is not going to be there. Dominic Keating is. Dominic Sandbrook is an author who actually once produced White Heat, amongst other things, and is a BBC commentator. But is it Dominic Keating? Is it a case of some of the other great authors that we're actually seeing there? Richard Piers Raymond, who will be there, the whole stack of other folk, or is it just a case of this is what Scarborough has actually been evolving for over the last several billion years of cosmic evolution?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. It's the whole thing, really, that when it comes together and you've done it and pulled it off and the doors open at 10 o'clock and everyone's coming in and everyone's happy and the radio's quiet, you know, and you're hip and you don't have, like, people shouting at you, you know you've done a good job. But I always love meeting the guests because I spend, like, months and months talking to them and dealing with them. And especially, you know, guests from Star Trek. I love Star Trek. I love Star Wars. I pretty much love everything. But I do love Star Trek, and I really did enjoy Enterprise, you know, and it's just great to meet them, you know, finally at last. I've had so many phone calls with him in LA, you know, and finally I get to meet him. He arrives tomorrow, actually.
Well,
so.
And in terms of shock news, you're probably already across this, Steve, but who would have thought back in the day that you would have had Councillor Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation in pantomime in Bridlington coming year? Exactly.
Mate, you couldn't write it.
Yeah.
You could not write it.
I mean, it certainly took me by surprise, I can tell you.
I thought it was April the 1st again. Then my phone went berserk because everyone knows, right? Well, basically, you don't know, but everyone knows that I actually love Marina Sirtis, right? Mm. She's like, since I first saw her in the early 90s on Next Gen, I fell for her completely, and I've got a cardboard cutout of her in my kitchen.
Steady. Oh, you didn't tell her that.
Yeah.
And she knows because we took pictures of her and we tweeted her. And she reacts, she loves it. She's a good girl. She loves a laugh, and she's up for a scream. That's
a scream.
In Panto in Bridge. She must be. She must be well up for it. But anyway, she's been chatting with us on Twitter a little bit about Sapphire Scarborough. She obviously couldn't do it this year because she's doing Destination Star Trek. Mm-hmm. If you do a DST show, you can't do any other shows in the UK. Mm-hmm. They have an embargo on you. So next year, like, as soon as it was announced, she announced it on Twitter, and everyone started pinging me. I got on her Twitter and I just went, I'll be there. We'll talk about Sci-Fi Scarborough. And she liked it. So I'm like, that'll do for me. Great. I'll go and I'll just stand outside and wait for her. I don't care if it's snowing, raining, hailing, and volcanic lava on me. I don't care. I'll wait.
That's what you call dedication. And not in a scary stalker way, but, you know, the sort of true sort of notion of fandom dedication. And yes, sadly, I have to say, as indeed I shared with yourself, Steve, that over the years, there's pretty much only been one event that I've thought, well, that's a bit of a rip-off, and that's very disappointing. And it was indeed Destination Star Trek. You know, I won't go any further.
What is Destination Star Trek?
In one sense, it's a celebration of the series that is Trek. It's designed, I mean, a couple of years ago, 50th anniversary, it was set up for Birmingham. And it was one of those things where I went along not as a reporter, not as a journalist, not as a kind of correspondent, but as somebody who was kind of an appreciator, not a fan, but an appreciator of the whole thing. And if you go to, I mean, Charlotte, how many cons have you actually been to? Because you've done a few conventions.
Oh, yeah, like four or five.
Four or five, exactly. Tragically, you can't get to Sci-Fi Scarborough this year.
Tragically, yeah. I'll be at Goth Weekend if you're over there. Yes. Whitby?
Well, you know, that's later on in Goth Weekend. That's bank holiday, isn't it? Is it?
Yeah, probably,
yes,
yeah.
Yes. So anyway, so going back to that, this is one of those where you think on paper, that's going to be fantastic, and you think, and everything, pretty much, it has to be said, Steve, including comments on social media, kind of they get wrong, I would say. But that's by the by. Apart from, well, maybe they look after the guests, okay. That's possibly about it.
Well, of course you do. I mean, this is the thing. And the guest lineup's always great. It's a killer guest lineup, but you need the rest to go with it.
Yeah.
You can't charge people that amount of money for to come in and spend more money getting autographs.
Even from my own point of view.
Is it one of those things? Is it 50 quid per autograph?
Hey, listen.
They're everywhere. They're all over the UK now. There's a lot of conventions
and
stuff, but at the end of the day, they're markets. or they're full of traders.
That is an issue.
Oh, it's only £6 to get in. Yeah, but all you can do is spend money when you get in. I don't mind saying it. I will say it, you know. I mean, I don't do it on the internet in words, but I will say it if someone wants to have a verbal chat with me or a disagreement or even an argument, they can come and talk to me about it, and I will explain to them why events like Fantasticon in Hull and Sci-Fi Scarborough and other events are leading the way and trailblazing, because we put effort in, a lot of effort and a lot of content, and there's stuff for people to do. Yes, they have to pay a little bit more to get in, but when they get in there, they don't have to spend any more money. And
well,
that is Sci-Fi Scarborough.
So it's not just a stall thing then? Do you have guests coming?
Oh, God,
or?
No.
You've got guests.
No.
You've got artists and authors.
Oh,
you've got traders.
You've got,
like, you've got
panel
talks. Workshops.
Nine zone building, quarter of a mile long. It's full of everything. Go and have a look at our schedules on our Facebook.
Yeah, we're on the website now.
The schedules are like, there's like 65 separate things going on, and that's without all the gaming and all the live music and all the R2D2s from the actual films that are there, because with the R2 builders, you know, a load of crazy Daleks chasing you around trying to exterminate you. I mean, there's just so much going on, I can't even remember.
Listen, you've got John Campling with the Death Eater Wand Workshop, you've got To the Hilt, nice Jedi Training Academy, you've got so many things, and actually, I mean, I'm not doing this because Brendan presenter endorsement, it was Ed Fortune, of course, who introduced us back in the day with Starburst. I think he might be coming along as well, possibly on Saturday or Sunday. It's a really, really great event, and our tickets still available. That's the key thing, Steve. Can people still book the thing?
They can book them and pick them up at the venue. I mean, the spa's website has fallen over 3 times in the past 2 weeks, and ticket sales have gone down, and people have been messaging, and I've said, look, just turn up, we have tickets on the door. It's a big old venue, there's loads of room to wander around. It's not like these conventions where you're stood in a queue sweating like chest to back to people and you're trying to look at something on a stall. It's not like that at all.
Charlotte, you can't get to this year. Next year, I guarantee the offer will be that we'll make it.
I'll be on the propaganda team,
I'll
be spreading the word.
There we are. Steve, it's been fantastic. I am counting the seconds, not in a scary way, obviously. And no, Steve, I don't have a cardboard cutout of yourself that actually can. No, step away from that, sir. But we look forward to connecting with your good self on Saturday. Have you had a reasonably okay interview and audio piece with us this evening yourself?
Lovely as always.
Well, there you are. Sci-Fi Scarborough. Check it out if you haven't already done so. It is. I mean, I was actually speaking to somebody earlier this morning, actually, who is not really a sci-fi fan at all, but she said she'd wandered along about 2 or 3 years ago and said it's a really, really great and interesting time. So even if you're not interested in science fiction, go along. You'd be very pleasantly surprised.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's heaps of stuff that's there.
Great fun.
It's like following your dreams, and it will be happening. Mind you, the dream of Marina Sirtis actually in Bridlington, that's still beyond me, Steve.
I'm still shaking now. It's still my beating heart. I'm going to send you a photograph of me with the cutout set. You love it.
Another life. kiss, but the prince hides his face from dreams in the mist. These dreams go on when I close my eyes. Every second of the night, I live another life. These dreams sleep when it's cold outside. Every moment I'm awake, the further I'm away. These dreams go on when I close my eyes. Every second of the night, I live another life. These dreams sleep when it's cold outside.
Every moment of the day, every second of the day, we're thinking, how long is it till Arthur Weingarten's back on air with us? And he's back today. How are you, Arthur?
I'm well, thank you, Alex. I'm well.
Now, we're having a little bit of a heat wave in Lincoln, England at present. How does it actually compare with San Diego? Is the weather warm? Are you reaching the highs of 18, 20 degrees centigrade? Apparently, in certain parts, it's warmer than Ibiza in this part of the British Isles.
The weather here is delightfully boring, sunny and cloudless.
Well, you know, it's standard. It works on that basis. Yeah, it's kind of.
Well, that's how come we live forever here, you see. That's why.
Lots of that vitamin D.
Very, very important. The voice you've just heard, Arthur, is that of Charlotte March, a relatively new midweek driver.
Hello, Charlotte.
Hello, how are you doing?
Hello.
And general all-round fine soul. Now, Arthur, when it comes to English and it comes to the written word and so on, as a wordsmith, how much care did you give your scripts? Were there moments where you crafted the whole thing, or was it plot, 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 and above all else, more plot when you're putting things together for Angela Lansbury, for instance, to incarnate your words in Murder, She Wrote, or whatever?
Well, in those days, plot was everything. Whereas today, with the longer forms and all that, you can manage to get in some sort of literate, intelligent information that isn't just plot. But in the days when I was doing my worst, it was page turning. So you had to have the plot moving forward rather quickly, and then if you could manage to get in a nice conversation here or there, that was pretty good. But no, it was page-turning.
Well, that exposition, of course, can be very useful, particularly if you're writing for radio, just to actually have a couple of characters explaining that they're walking through the door very quietly, etc., for reasons that are beyond the pale. Arthur, yesterday, or indeed this week, I have watched an updated TV series which was originally created by Irwin Allen. You may have heard of Irwin Allen back in the day, Land of the Giants, Lost in Space.
Yes, he was a friend.
Oh,
yes.
Well, this is good stuff, because Lost in Space has been remade. And I have to say...
Oh, really? I didn't know
yeah,
that.
It's,
yeah,
it's on Netflix. The first batch of 10 episodes has all dropped at once, all been released. I've worked my way through the first 4 or 5. And I have to say, it's different. And certainly we have a female Zachary Smith, for reasons that are made, you know, relatively queer, clear in all sorts of ways. We've also got the robot that's actually there. Did you ever consider, or did Irwin consider effectively, that 50-odd years after the Robinson family, with, of course, Jonathan Harris as the archetypal Zachary Smith, and, of course, the robot and the William the family, Danger, Danger, Will Robinson, do you think he would have ever thought, yeah, they're going to remake Lost in Space? I mean, after all, to a certain extent, and I'm sure you'd be aware of this, Arthur, Lost in Space itself was a remake of Swiss Family Robinson, but set in space.
Yeah, if you're asking, did we think there was life after death, what we all wanted was to have another season. That was it. That was it. If you were in 1958, you wanted 1959. That was the goal. And we thought competition was fierce back then. Can you imagine.
Well, we were talking last week with one of our regular correspondents and editor in the US for SFX magazine, and she was saying, this is the wonderful Tara Bennett, that there's something like 480 new TV shows that are kind of produced on an annual basis. I think it's Kelly Duncan Joyner as well. It was saying that, you know, and actually with Netflix, with Amazon Prime and so on, it's not as though they're kind of just released as a pilot and then that's it. You know, these are shows that are lasting for a wee while. I mean, are we in a new golden age of television?
Yes, absolutely. In every sense, it's true. I mean, I'm boggled. Netflix spends billions of dollars on new productions. So does now Amazon and all of them. A few years ago, I count this as the high watermark of the change. A few years ago, the Writers Guild, the Directors Guild, and the Producers Guild, of which I'm a member of each of them, sent out warning alerts saying that our production here in the United States was at a low ebb, and therefore members' dues were at a low ebb. And they were all worried about the financial condition of the guilds, much less the pension funds. Today, they are 150% funded. It has been a boon in terms of production and the fees that are generated for that. And what happens is, of course, you get the odd shows like The Sopranos and on and on and on, where they're genre-breaking. They literally are literary kind of things. I have just recently seen on Starz here, which is, I assume you get it there, I don't know.
The only difference, Arthur, is basically in Britain it's STARZ, in America it's STARZ. It's an interesting sort of line of that. It's a Z or
yes,
a Z.
Right. Well, they just did Howard's End, and I don't know if you've seen it there, but it just started here about 3 weeks ago. And I find it absolutely appalling, just appalling. Aside from the fact that the film, which I thought was rather good, the feature film, the book was better and remains so for all time. But what they've done here is taken the DC Comics approach and made it larger than life for an American audience that they think cannot consume British either literature or acting. So you have Tracy Ullman playing an American woman who is a boomer. There isn't a word she says that doesn't make you sit back in your chair because you have to lower the sound thing. So there's a blessing and a curse with this. You know, when you have everyone in such fierce competition, there's bound to be, I think, things like that happening. On the other end, there are some wonderful European things that are getting into the mix here. And Annette and I watch these all the time. We're really happy to have Netflix and show these European things, Spanish, German, French.
And we also seem to be having a certain flexibility which allows for series to be, or at least episodes of series, to not necessarily just be the prerequisite 42 minutes and allowing 18 minutes for commercials. You can actually have them slightly over
exactly.
The hour and so on. I remember the time in the 80s where it was generally deemed, or seemed to be the case in the 1980s, that American television, once it effectively was reducing its hour-long dramas to 44 minutes and 42 minutes to allow times for commercials, even then people said, it's losing the plot here. We've kind of gone away from that a little bit, haven't we?
Yes, yeah. They're being forced to. But American networks still adhere to the hour thing, whereas, you know, the BBC allowed things to run over. ITV did here and there. What they do now, to give you the illusion that the commercials are not dominant so much, they preload them either at the front or at the end, so that you may have a longer act break, times between that. But the number of commercial minutes are the same, if not even increased. They're desperate because networks here are under such pressure from the cable services now, noise, and I'm sure it's over there too. Oh. ITV's got to be feeling it, you know.
It's a whole range of these. Charlotte, do you get the sense that we're living in a golden age, or is it a case of, no, I'm too busy doing my English degree, reading books, I cannot possibly spend time watching television?
Well, no, it might be a generation.
Hooray
thing.
For that.
Well, this is true. Well, the thing with Netflix, it used to be quite special when you had a Netflix original. I mean, House of Cards, not so great now. Orange is the New Black. Used to be a hallmark of a gold standard, if you know what I mean, but there's been sort
well,
of
yes,
the same
but
thing.
If you view it with the original House
oh, that's
of Cards,
true. Oh,
it,
great,
it's
yeah.
night and day. I mean, the American sense of irony is still
of course,
very
of course.
Well buried. So,
although, given subsequent activities in the Kevin Spacey household, clearly well, irony is very much writ large when it comes to House of Cards. So, step away from that one, I think, for obvious reasons. Let's move back to Owen Allen, because, I mean, he went on to become a fairly significant film producer of disaster movies, The Joys of a Towering Inferno and Earthquake and so on. But he kind of cut his teeth on as I say, the sort of television, the spectacle. I mean, I heard it once said that in many ways, Owen Allen had a lot in common with P.T. Barnum. He was a showman. He basically didn't worry too much about the plot and the writing and so on, but it was a case of he wanted the spectacle on screen. Was that something which chimed with your experience of him, Arthur?
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, he was the Bill Castle of television. He knew how to promote and how to take the basic things of our fear of the unknown or of natural disasters and really make them larger than life. And it worked. It worked. He was a showman.
Well,
he was a showman. And that's what's lacking so much in today's world, where you see it takes a comic book to make a series or a film.
Mm. What do you think about that with spectacle on the small screen rather than the big screen?
Oh, I think spectacles are absolutely marvelous. They're terrific.
I'm wearing them at this moment, Arthur. I think it's wonderful. You know, it's like rose-coloured. I'm seeing everything. So wonderful rose-coloured spectacles. It's genius stuff. I feel I have to actually cope with the political situation in Britain and America, but there we are. Moving dexterously onwards, Arthur, in terms of the series, were there any Owen Allen shows which you thought, I wish I'd written for The Time Tunnel, Land of the Giants, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, or indeed Lost in Space?
What is the question?
Would you have liked to have written for either of those four series, that quartet from Owen Allen of The Time Tunnel?
No.
I thought you might say that. You say exactly.
It's a solid no.
It was. Exactly. Yeah. You got your Bob and Wanda Duncan. You got your Owen Allen himself writing one or two pilots, etc. You've got your Attack of the Killer Tomatoes and a whole range of things, and the Giant Vegetable Rebellion, which was indeed the episode that I think closed the original series of Lost in Space.
But may I tell you an incident which will illuminate, I think, why I wouldn't want to write for them.
Please do.
A friend was producing my favorite Martian and asked me in the first season would I write one of the early episodes, and I said of course I would. So I went in and pitched the story, and they liked the story, and they said go write the script, and we need it as quickly as possible. And I did a first draft rather quickly. And I brought it in, and my friend, the producer, was ill that day, and I met with the executive story editor, a fellow who had done many of these types of shows, and indeed had worked for Irwin Allen for a good number of years. And he said, oh, Arthur, I like the script very much, but I have two points here that I'd like to work out with you, and maybe we could even settle it in this meeting and just go right into final draft. I said, fine, what's that? And he said, in scene two, act two, let me read the dialogue. I said, okay. And he read me back the dialogue I wrote. I said, yes. He said, a Martian would never say that.
Yeah. You've got to, it's living the part.
So,
I mean, it was Ray Walston
who
was the Martian.
No, I looked at him and I said, I'm sorry to have to counter you on that, but my Martian would say that.
Yeah.
And with that, I got up and walked out.
Precisely. And more to the point, would Ray Walston have said it, or would he have left it to Bill Bixby? You know, what a series, what a show.
Yes, right. I literally got up and I said, you do it. And that was it. That was the end of my contribution.
And that, Arthur, why is one of the reasons, just one of them, why Hollywood is just that little bit better for you, having been a part and still being a part of the whole essence. Arthur.
No, you're too kind. But I must say, those were the days when you could do things like that and have no reverberation. It wasn't like, you'll never work in this town again. The guy laughed. He laughed as I walked out. He fixed whatever he wanted. I never saw the thing. I never watched it. I got my residuals and continue to get residuals for it. But, you know, that was that. I love the line. I mean, I've obviously dined out on it for years, and Martian would never say that. Yeah.
And I feel you have delivered it with consummate style and aplomb, the like of which, again, resonates through the centuries. Arthur, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today?
I have had a wonderful time. Thank you.
And are you back with us again in May?
Yes.
Absolutely. Here's John Williams. Here's the Time Tunnel. Strange but true, a series that was produced long, long, long before Keira Allsbrook ever actually emerged in terms of Darby, and even with her canine friend who might be barking in the background, we say welcome back, Keira Allsbrook. How are you?
Hi, I'm really good, thank you. Yes, Dickie is currently, barking at a gate, actually. So
he's barking at a gate.
He's barking at a gate. I mean, he earlier actually, because of how the glorious weather we're having over here, it's probably the same in Lincoln, and he actually jumped up and ripped off one of the towels down, and then basically became a ghost dog for about 5 minutes, and he was running around in circles, and then ran into the door. But that's
relatable
story.
You see, this, Charlotte, is one of the reasons why Keira effectively stood out on an open day. Well, you know, a lot of students come along and you think, what's this about? You know, we knew that somewhere down the line, Keira would have acres of anecdotal tales to share about her dog becoming a ghost. It's just week in, week out.
You just think of me as, that's a student with the lunatic of a dog.
No, the dog is a lunatic.
No, as if Keira, we as academics and presenters and hosts actually sort of have students pigeonholed in certain specific ways. This is ridiculous, you know. You are a Derbyshire correspondent. How's the driving lessons going, by the way? Are they successful? Have you passed the test?
Oh God!
All right, so is it just a case of, well, I'm just going to get a chauffeur when I get to Lincoln? I'll get somebody to drive.
Exactly. I did my driving test, I think it was about 3 weeks ago now, and everything was fine. And this is tips for anyone that's probably doing the test or whatever. But basically, it was because I was such a nervous wreck that I was going too slow, and that's basically where I got my serious faults for, and it was because I was going in a picky kind of highway, and I was going at 23.
And
it was just a big kerfuffle, and the instructor was completely oblivious to it at the time, and then he realised it was just a long queue of traffic behind. And you start to hear the beeping, so I think that was why.
Not enough people enjoy the journey. Exactly. Everybody's going too fast.
Thank you, Charlotte. You know, you do work, you're just setting a whole new fuelly economic way forward from that point of view. It'll work out okay, and there's always public transport or indeed teleportation. One of those two things will certainly work. So how are you coming to the end of your BTEC course now? Are you gearing up for obviously what, towards the end of the summer, we'll see you emerge as a regular weekly contributor to the Midweek Drive and indeed student reading communications and public relations at the University of Lincoln? Any advice, Charlotte, you'd like to provide for Kira, who's taking that step? You know, she's going to leave Derby behind for a period of time and head to the whole notion of the city of Lincoln.
I suggest buying lots of tins of beans, forget meat, just get some lentils. It's the cheapest thing available for your protein. Just survival mode.
Well, it's a useful line. And remember, it's not as though you're going to be in a different country. Well, actually, different county, yes, but not different country. It'll work on that basis. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Kira Alsbrook?
Yes.
Are you back with us again in a fortnight's time?
In a fortnight? As long as Zippy isn't up to something stupid. But, yeah, it should be.
Zippy is, of course, the dog who we actually work through, right. In case there is some kind of line for Zippy, some sort of code, etc. And what breed is Zippy?
A Labrador.
Yeah. So a Labrador called Zippy.
He lives up to his breed as well, completely. Right. Completely idiotic in every way. And he's very lovable, though, he is. But he's very... he likes to protect his voice a lot, should we just say that?
Well, you know, that sounds good. Good, healthy pair of lungs. Good, important sort of delivery from the whole perspective. I mean, we can't ask for anything more than that. He's kind of stating that clearly he's on the planet and he's on a planet for the reason. That's the important thing. You know, we don't want to sort of go any further as far as that's concerned. The bottom line is his mistress will be back on radio talking about Zippy, embarrassing him publicly on air, allowing him to actually sort of bark in the distance, and other things will occur as well. Isn't that right, Kira?
Yes, that is correct.
This one's for you and people who think, actually, the right speed, 23 miles per hour.